So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government instead of from those who would take away our freedom. If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, there is no freedom.
They'll never take our freedom!
There are too many guns on the street. We lose 93 million Americans.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here. I've had an issue come up that I need to address this week. And don't worry, there's nothing wrong. I just have the front end of my car torn apart for repairs and I don't want to act or sound distracted. I will be back next week, and in light of the continuing soft coup that is occurring in the House, thinly disguised as an impeachment hearing, I believe it is important that I re-air who will win a civil war. It's coming, my friends, and if they don't knock their crap off soon, it will hit the fan. Stay vigilant. Hey folks, it is Tommy Freedom. I want to welcome you back to another episode of Freedom Rings. Now this week, I'm going to be talking about the possibility of a civil war in America. If civil war were in fact to break out, who would win? First of all, who would be fighting against each other, and of those, who would win? Now before we even get into that, let me just actually bring up what could cause a civil war, an armed insurrection. Well, there are a few things. Now, something to keep in mind that most of us are not thinking about is a huge October surprise in 2020. Now, the majority of the money in this country is held by interests who fund the left. They contribute to these politicians who are voted in on the left, who are becoming more and more progressive, and these people pull their strings. They're the puppeteers. Now, if it looks like Donald Trump is going to win, and I feel fairly certain that he is, about 6 weeks out, they could actually crash the economy. And don't think that these folks will not cut off their own noses to spite their own faces. Believe me, they will do that. They hate Donald Trump so much that they would actually crash our economy and throw us into not only a recession, but possibly even a depression to discredit Donald Trump and keep him from getting reelected. That is a very, very strong possibility, my friends. Do not discount that. If that does happen, then the American public at that point, their eyes will be opened as to who the liberals are and what they have done. And at that point, you may not see an actual civil war. You may see what I have described before as an armed insurrection, where people will take out all of these liberal politicians, all of these judges, and it would be over very, very quickly. And those who were surviving would know not to do that again. That's a possibility. But it is also very possible that the government might get involved. Now, with Donald Trump being in office, that's not necessarily going to happen. If a liberal were in office in power as the president, then that would become a very real possibility. But let's just say that one particular avenue to cause that might be us going into another depression. That might actually cause us to overthrow all of these Jews and take this country back and establish it the way that it was intended. Now, there is another real distinct possibility here. Now, let me pull up just a snippet from an article here. This is entitled Ann Coulter, Trump Will Be the Last Republican President. And this is a little snippet from a news article. It says, best-selling author and conservative pundit Ann Coulter, who early in 2016 predicted that Donald Trump's presidential win would come about, said that because of changing demographics and the propensity of many young immigrants to vote for liberals, Donald Trump will be the last Republican president. In a November 28th interview with Editor-in-Chief Alex Marlow on Breitbart News, Coulter said, "Every day, more and more immigrants turn 18 and start voting, canceling out all of your votes. It's about five more years. Trump will be the last Republican president." Now, what she's saying is very true, particularly with states like California and New York, who are issuing driver's licenses to illegal aliens, allowing them to vote. I believe New York State just brought this about within the past few days. So they are deliberately trying to overturn our representation. Another way that this will be brought about is the fact that you have so many states now that are joining this collective to essentially overthrow the Electoral College and vote the way that the popular vote goes would also bring this about as well. So a combination of the two, this does sound very, very plausible that Donald Trump will be the last Republican president, whether he's voted out this time or whether he takes a second term in office. At that point, the conservative right will realize that their voice is gone and we will never be represented again. And at that point in time, yes, they will take up arms. That is almost guaranteed. Now, this has been studied by the federal government, and they employ what they call red teams. Essentially, these red teams go in and they analyze the vulnerabilities of certain government organizations and things like that. It's almost like a security company hiring an ex-con who used to be a burglar to find the weaknesses in their systems, that sort of a thing. These red teams go in and they analyze everything. And the Department of Defense actually had a red team go in and analyze what would happen if they tried to take over. In other words, if they tried to declare martial law, if they declared war on the conservative right, what would happen? And in every single case, every red team member crunched the numbers and came up with the same answer as to who would win and who would lose. And who would lose would be the federal government every time. Just like in war games, it doesn't matter who launched first. As that computer was calculating these things at the speed of light, there was no winner. Well, it's very clear that the conservative right would in fact win a civil war. It would be pointless for the federal government to engage us in a civil war or an armed revolt, a new revolution. There are 15 items that they went over, and I'll go over these with you in detail so that you can understand for yourself who has the advantage and who doesn't and why. So what actually are these factors? And there are 14, not 15, my mistake. There is a total of 14 of these factors. Let me just run over these with you real quick, and then I'll go into them and explain each one in detail and explain who will win and why. Now, the first factor would be just overall leverage of the situation. And that pretty much would be involving the power grid going down and causing extreme chaos. Now, we have all seen in recent years what happens when we have solar activity and part of the power grid goes down. There is just absolute chaos when people don't have their power, they don't have their air condition or their heat, they don't have their cable TV, they don't have their internet. And as more and more people get more and more dependent upon these devices, it will only get worse if this happens. And really, you only need to take down, I think it's 9 of these big substations across the United States, of which there are like 10,000. You only need 9 to go down to overload the system so much that it will crash the entire grid. Now, if the entire grid goes down, you will just have utter chaos and anarchy in the cities and all the suburban areas. Now, the people who will be less affected by that are, of course, the conservative right, because we're used to camping. We're used to being without those amenities. We may not like it, but we can do without them. Whereas your lefties, your progressives, and a lot of your minorities, well, maybe with the exception of the Mexicans, they might be able to live without air conditioning, but they too have gotten used to a lot of those amenities. So for the most part, and I'm actually explaining this in detail, I will not do that from here on. I'll go through the rest of them and then come back and do the rest of this in detail. But this is just an example. For overall leverage of the entire population, by taking down the power grid and causing this chaos, the right is going to have a huge advantage over the left. Now let me go through the rest of these and then I'll come back and explain them all in detail. Just the sheer raw numbers of armed civilians. Number three is the sheer raw numbers of armed civilians versus the military and the police. Number four is having enough people to carry out the revolution against the other side. Number five is the political leaning of the military. Number six is the political leaning of police. Number seven are battle logistics, and that involves fourth generation warfare, which I will explain. The military action of desertions. Now, former military action, who would the veterans side with? Number 10, military weaponry, who would have the advantage with that? Number 11, using nukes. Number 12 would be geography and how that would play into it. Number 13 would be international involvement. What would the rest of the world do? And then overall mainstream media dealing with public relations, how would that affect the outcome? So those are the 14 factors that I'll go over. Again, I pretty much covered number one, got ahead of myself on that. But definitely we would have the advantage by knocking out the power grid, because that would be one of the first things that we would do. That would be a huge advantage and a huge upper hand for us. All right, so let's take a look at number two, just the sheer raw numbers of armed civilians. We are the largest standing military in the world, folks. Now, we may not be ready to roll at a moment's notice, but very shortly thereafter, we would be coming together as a standing military of 200 million. No one else can come close to that except possibly China, and they would not be fighting with the same veracity that we would. The sheer number of people who are armed in this country is amazing. It's almost 89 out of 100 people have access to at least one firearm. And keep in mind, the liberals hate guns. They want to ban guns. The majority of your progressives don't own guns. So why am I talking about the progressives here? I mean, it's essentially right versus left, because this would generally only happen under a government that was pretty much entirely blue. If, say, Hillary Clinton had won, or if Joe Biden wins and starts clamping down on us and taking away our right to own guns and other rights and taxing the hell out of us, that it would cause. So we would be fighting that government, and of course, that would involve the liberals. So that's why I'm saying this would be right versus left. It would be the establishment along with the left. Now let me get back to what I was saying. As far as armed civilians go, the liberals generally don't own the guns. That is your conservatives. And namely, the majority of those are white males. Also with an aging retired veteran population. These guys know how to use those guns and they're getting old. They may not really be afraid to die. They may actually be quite willing to do what these young punks on the other side with their stolen guns would be afraid to do. So we just have this huge number, and these numbers are much higher than we're actually led to believe. We're told that there's something like 186 million guns or 200 million guns for 86 million gun owners, something ridiculous like that. Folks, there are known to be around 400 million guns in the United States. And I want you to listen to this number very carefully because it's astounding. 6 trillion rounds of ammunition are in the hands of private civilians. Not 6 billion, 6 trillion. Just stop and think about the few people that you may know who own several guns and how many thousands or tens of thousands of rounds of ammo that they own, and multiply that by millions. 6 trillion rounds. So again, the advantage is going to go to the right. A huge, huge advantage if it comes to an actual shooting war, us versus them. Continuing with raw numbers on number 3, armed civilians versus the military and the police. How would we stack up? There's, I think, like 1 million police officers in this country. And right now we have like 1.5 million active military. So, again, the sheer numbers that we have, there's no contest. Now, yes, they may have access to some things that we don't, but generally they're not going to be able to use them except maybe a grenade here and there, or an M16, or a squad weapon, something like that. But for the most part, the numbers are just so stacked against them that it's not going to even be a contest. So that's it for raw numbers. Now, who actually has enough people who are willing to carry out a revolution? Well, you have a lot of armchair warriors on both sides, but for the most part, your liberals don't like to fight. They don't like to get into combative situations. That's why they formed Flower Power back in the 60s. They were afraid to go to war. They were afraid to fight. They ran to Canada. They preached love. And for the most part, they still do. Yeah, you got some violent Negroes out there, MS-13 gangs, you know, Hispanics. But for the most part, your modern-day liberals, particularly your millennials, are scared to fight. So we are going to have an advantage when it comes to just having enough people to actually make this happen. So I'm going to take a quick break here. When I come back, I'm going to deal with the political leanings of both the military and the police, because that's going to affect the numbers that we're dealing with even more, which really wouldn't affect an outcome, but just for the, I guess, provenance of having them on our side or being against us, it's important to consider those numbers. So I'll hit that when I get back.
30 years from now, my kids will be outnumbered. Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Minorities, homosexuals, and women. I'm not a hater, but I hate that line.
Me too. You know, you see it written like that in the media.
Yes, I've noticed that. Why do you think that is? I don't have anything in common with so-called minorities.
Minorities, right. White people are the world's minority.
That's true.
I think they like to group all women together so white women won't consider their race. If they don't consider their white identity, they won't recognize the threats against it.
That's a really good point.
So, whenever I hear the phrase, minorities and women, or minorities, homosexuals and women, I'll call it what it is, cheap shots against white women.
This message brought to you by the White Women's Perspective.
Georgetown law professor Louis Michael Seidman says that the U.S. Constitution is archaic and downright evil. And people like this are teaching in America's law schools? It's frightening. Well, here's your chance to listen to one attorney who stands on principle and fights for the dreams of freedom-loving Americans. Listen to Jason Robb, host of Cross Examine, each week right here on KKK Radio.
Side of me. Join Canadian Association for Freedom of Expression Director Paul Fromm for Walking on the Fighting Side of Me. That's The Fighting Side of Me with Canadian Association of Freedom of Expression, Paul Fromm, only on KKKRadio.com.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here for Freedom Rings. I invite you to tune in every week and listen to my show, Freedom Rings, and hear what I, Tommy Freedom, have to say. It's usually pretty interesting and quite informative. It may have something to do with freedom. It may have something to do with liberty. It may be downright funny, but it will always be informative. So be sure and tune in each week to listen to me, Tommy Freedom, here on my show at Freedom Rings, broadcasting to you loud and clear on KKK Radio.
Of course, you know, this means war.
Red hot protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Just obey your secret safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA, standing on the edge of a revolution.
During the break, a little sparrow somehow flew down the chimney and got into the fireplace. Luckily, I got some glass doors on there, and it's been flying around in there, and Misty is just having an absolute ball. She's completely enthralled with this little bird that's stuck inside the fireplace. Hopefully, it'll find its way back out. But getting back to what I was discussing before the break, let's break down how the political leaning of the military and the police would come into play. Now, that would be 5 and 6 on this factor chart. So, regarding the military, the majority of the military is in support of Donald Trump. I mean, a huge portion of them actually voted for him. I mean, obviously, you've got some gang members who join the military specifically to learn tactics, but for the most part, your bleeding heart liberals are not going to join the military. So in the event that something went down, as long as Donald Trump was in office, you would have a huge support for him. Now, regardless of who was in office, you're still going to have a largely conservative portion of the military. Again, you're going to have some that aren't. They're in there for some other reason, but the majority of your military members are going to be freedom-loving, gun-toting Americans who would be on our side should something happen, which is really good because they're already tactically trained, which is going to get into something a little bit further down regarding the logistics of the battle should it actually happen. Regarding the political leaning of the police, that's a little bit more balanced because a lot of police officers in urban areas are in fact minorities. You've got blacks, Hispanics, and others, Indians in a lot of cases now, Muslims that are just disgusting me by wearing their turbans or whatever you call them, their headgear on duty in place of their duty cap, which is absolutely disgusting. So I think as far as the political leaning of the police, that's going to be pretty much split down the middle. So far, this is the first one, number 6. I'm going to go ahead and call that one a tie. The military is a big, big advantage towards us, but the local police are going to be a tie. But again, should something go down, the military, you're going to have a lot of desertions. Now, those who do remain to their posts, that might be split. Now, you're going to have desertions on both sides for various reasons. First of all, you're going to have some of those who are of the cowardly type that are going to desert simply because they don't want to fight. And you're going to have others who are not going to fight against their own people, but they will fight for them. Whereas the police, a lot of these people who are in the inner cities, these large metro areas, might actually fight against us. But I know an awful lot of police officers and even a lot of federal agents that are actually on our side when it came down to that, which is something else that I don't see listed here. No, I don't. I don't see government agencies. So let me just go ahead and insert that in here. Who in the government agencies would actually do like they did at Waco and Ruby Ridge? I don't think that the majority of our ABC alphabet groups would actually do that. Under Clinton and Butcherino, you had those FBI agents who did do that, but basically they had gone rogue. They were led by a rogue attorney general. As long as Donald Trump is in office, I don't think you would see that happen. He would order the DOJ pretty much to stand down. I feel fairly certain on that. So that one, there might be a slight advantage to the left over us, but it wouldn't be that much. And again, you don't have that many federal officers, federal agents. And when it comes down to the military and the police put together, you've got maybe 2.5 million. Add another 500,000 for the federal agents. That's only 3 million people. And you can assume that at least half or more are going to defect to our side. So there really is no big advantage, even where you have some of the ties. So let's get on now to number 7, which is battle logistics. Well, see, we are now fighting what's called 4G warfare, which stands for fourth generation, just like with your cell phone, 4G, 5G, fourth and fifth generation. I mean, years ago, you had two opposing forces that faced each other on the battlefield and fired each other. Well, initially, they ran at each other with swords. Then they ran at each other with muskets and bayonets. That's gone the way of the dodo. That was first generation. Then you got into where you had some tactical operations going on. And then you got into bigger, heavier weaponry, and it involved tanks and aircraft and things like that. Well, now, we are no longer fighting that kind of a war for the most part. And we've seen this in places like Afghanistan. That is what's called a fourth generation of warfare. We first saw this come about in Korea, got really big in Vietnam, and then absolutely huge in Afghanistan and Iraq. And that's where you're fighting a force that's mostly insurgents. You're not fighting an actual army. You're dealing with people who are hiding in the bushes. And this is what we learned in the Revolutionary War. We learned this tactic from the Indians. The Brits were amazingly surprised and overtaken when we popped out from behind trees and stone walls and shot at them. They weren't used to that. And that is what has turned over the years into the fourth generation of warfare. So they wouldn't really be able to use their really heavy weaponry, certainly not missiles or nukes or anything like that, because we're going to be hiding, we're going to be coming out of the woodwork. And also, just like we encountered in Korea and Vietnam, they're not going to know who the good guys and the bad guys are because we're not going to be wearing uniforms. So it's going to be almost impossible for the military or the government to know who to shoot at unless they're being fired at upon themselves. Now let's go to number 8 regarding military action, and that involves actual desertions. And I covered this kind of briefly a couple of minutes ago, that you're going to have people who are going to leave the military for various reasons. And that would probably be split either way. So I'm going to go ahead and give a tie to that one. Oh, going back to 4G warfare under battle logistics, we've got a huge advantage because, number one, the government isn't used to really fighting against that. I mean, they have some that learned over in Afghanistan, but most of those people now are going to be on our side. Also, we're used to hunting, we're used to being out in the woods, we're used to camping, we're used to putting on camouflage and sneaking up on things and killing them. So again, we have a huge advantage over the left on that one. Getting back to desertions, that's going to be pretty much split. So again, I give a tie to that one. Now, former military service, coming up on number 9 here. Those who have seen former military service in action, those are going to be your veterans who have seen action. we have a huge advantage here. Because, again, most of the people who join the military are not on the left. They're not bleeding heart liberals. They're usually more of a conservative base. And we have millions of former military amongst us. Yeah, you might have a million and a half in the military currently, but it's all those who have retired, the veterans. They still know how to fight. Many of them still have their own weapons. They know how to use these things, and they're going to be on our side. And that is going to be a huge, huge advantage for those on our side, who would most likely be known as the insurgents, because we're pretty much going to be the ones that will actually start a war. We may be attacked initially, but we are the ones who are going to come out of the woodwork and actually engage the other side in this. Number 10 is military weaponry. Now here I'm going to just start right out and say that the military is going to have the advantage. Obviously, they have a lot of technology. They have the tanks. They have short-range, long-range missiles. They have squad automatic weapons. They've got 50 caliber machine guns. So yeah, right off the bat, they've got an advantage over us. However, a lot of that weaponry is not going to be usable in a war against us. They really won't be able to use tanks. They're really not going to be able to use short-range missiles, mortars, that sort of thing, unless they find an encampment somewhere, and then, yeah, they could drop mortars on them. So even though they do have, and I'd say a good advantage over us with their weaponry, it's not going to last for long because they're not really going to be able to use it. And I think that a lot of that stuff would end up being captured by our side anyway. Because you're going to have some of the military that are going to be on our side to begin with. So once the battle actually starts playing out, it's probably going to level the playing field, or in this case, the battlefield. So initially, yeah, the government is going to have all the big ordnance. But within a very short time, I think you'll see that that will level out, and it will pretty much cancel itself out. So initially, yeah, that's going to be a good advantage for them, but in the long run, no. I think that would actually end up being a tie and would not really behoove one side or the other to really use them. So again, you're going to be coming down to fighting tactically. Now, another thing to consider with that is just the sheer numbers that they will be fighting. Again, if the military is split, you're down to probably under a million people that will be spread out over the entire country, not to mention those who are based overseas. So I really don't think that military weapons would really play into this type of a warfare, because it's not going to be like it is in Afghanistan or like it was in Vietnam or Korea, because again, this time it's going to be on our own soil. And it's just going to play out entirely different. While it is fourth generation warfare, it may actually be in the process of morphing into a fifth generation that we haven't really encountered yet, because up till now, all of the enemy combatants, well, they've been in other countries. They've been other types of people. They've been Asians, or they've been Arabs, or they've been Muslims. Never have we had this type of warfare waged against people of our own type, and that is a first world country. We haven't gone to battle really against the Russians. We certainly haven't gone to battle against Europeans. We haven't gone to battle against ourselves. So this may be morphing into a different type of scenario altogether. And the more it changes like that, the more it's going to be advantageous to our side. Now on that note, I'm going to take a short break here. If you haven't figured out by now, this is an hour show this week. So be back in a couple of minutes, and then we'll hit the third and final segment and wrap everything up for the week. Stay tuned. Be right back.
Hi, Hello, this is Attorney Jason Robb. Have you ever thought of remembering the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan in your will or trust? We are deeply appreciative of the help and support our friends have given to this important work over the years. The support towards this holy mission of bringing a message of hope and deliverance to our people must continue even after you are gone. Our race, faith, and nation are worth every sacrifice we can make. We must continue the struggle until America has been delivered from the vice of death. Our children are depending on it. Email me at jasonrobb@windstream.net and I will help you to continue your fight for our future upon your death.
College students, high school students, business owners, entrepreneurs, learn how you can be a person of influence for a new America. Enroll in Soldiers of the Cross Training Institute. Learn more at www.sotctraininginstitute.com.
From electric outages to the zombie apocalypse, get your survival tips from Prepper Bob. He's the world's biggest Boy Scout, and he's only right here. Only on the Prepper Bob Show, and only on KKKRadio.com. That's the Prepper Bob Show. Check your local listings at KKKRadio.com. And remember to always be prepared.
Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here for Freedom Rings. I invite you to tune in every week and listen to my show, Freedom Rings, and hear what I, Tommy Freedom, have to say. It's usually pretty interesting and quite informative. It may have something to do with freedom. It may have something to do with liberty. It may be downright funny, but it will always be informative. So be sure and tune in each week to listen to me, Tommy Freedom, here on my show at Freedom Rings, broadcasting to you loud and clear on KKK Radio.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know,
welcome back to Freedom Rings. This is the third and final segment of this show, which has actually run over into an hour this week. Kind of unusual, but I do occasionally have something that's a really, really good topic, and rather than break it down into several shows, if I can do it in an hour, generally, I will. So far, we have talked about leverage over the power grid causing chaos, just the sheer numbers of armed civilians and civilians versus military and the police. Do we have enough people to actually carry out a revolution? The political leaning of the military and the police, battle logistics, military action regarding desertions, people who have had former military service, and the military weaponry that might be involved. What that leaves now is the use of nuclear weapons, the geography that would be involved, international involvement, and the mainstream media and public relations and how that might affect things. So let's start with nuclear weapons. Obviously, we don't have any nukes. The military has the nukes. Neither the right nor the left have the nukes. The government does. However, somebody other than Trump being in office, obviously the government is going to mean the left. So at that point, they're going to have the nukes. There are a couple problems, though. While that does sound like a huge advantage at first, it's not. And let me explain why. First of all, the majority of our population centers are liberals. They're the left. So they wouldn't nuke New York City or Washington, D.C. or Baltimore or Chicago or L.A. or Atlanta, because that would take out their own people with relatively little damage to our side. Consequently, the areas where we have our strongholds, they're few and spread out. Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, Montana. It wouldn't make any sense to drop a nuke in Kansas. It just wouldn't. So that automatically brings their side down. Also, if this does happen, I talked about earlier desertions within the military or those actually coming to our side. All we would need would be one rogue submarine commander to come to our side who had nuclear missiles on his boat, and right there, boom, you've leveled the playing field. Additionally, you'd have more than one. You would also have silos that were at the point in time being taken over by those who were sympathetic to our side. There would have to be at least a dozen missile silos that were controlled by U.S. Air Force personnel sympathetic to our side. So right off the bat, we're going to have ICBMs from silos, and we're going to have possibly ICBMs, if not short-range nukes, on submarines. So right there, that automatically gives us a tie. However, here's where we have the upper hand in that. I told you, they can't use nukes against us. And I gave you the reasons why. And it is exactly those reasons they can't be used against us that they can be used against them. First strike would probably be New York City. At that point, you would instantly wipe out 7 to 8 million people, the majority of whom are left-wing liberals. Additionally, there are more Jews living in New York City than anywhere else in the world. I think even tops Israel, okay? The majority of your New Yorkers are Jews or sympathetic to Jews. They're going to be progressives. That's where your big money centers are. First strike would be against New York. Second strike would be against D.C., because you get more bang for your buck. Even if you only had one bomb, New York would be the place to unleash it. So right then and there, that automatically brings a huge advantage to our side. So a lot of people talk about use of nukes and how it would be a tie because nobody would really want to use them against one side or the other. Nope. I'm calling BS on that strategy because it would actually work for us. We take out New York, Chicago, Baltimore, D.C., maybe even Atlanta, Detroit, and L.A., maybe even Seattle. And that's it. Game over. Game is over. And it wouldn't take that many to get that. It would take just one strike. Washington, D.C., or New York City, right off the bat, boom, that's it. They would give it up. Now, the next thing to address is going to be the geography of where we're going to be fighting. Now, we would be fighting in isolated pockets. The government, the military, would have to get all of their forces across the country and get set up. Well, the geography of this nation, first of all, right split down the middle is the mighty Mississippi. It goes all the way from the Gulf of Mexico up into northern Minnesota. So you have geographic bottlenecks. You only have a few bridges, really, that cross the Mississippi River. I don't know exactly how many there are. There's probably several dozen. But for the amount of roadways in this nation, they are bottlenecks. You can't cross the Mississippi if those bridges are taken out. And they wouldn't even need to be taken out. They would just need to be controlled with the threat of being taken out. Don't cross this bridge. We have it loaded with explosives. You start to cross this bridge, we blow it up. So stay on your side of the bridge, all right? Now, on either side of the Mississippi, you have two incredibly huge mountain ranges, the Appalachians and the Rockies, which further subdivide that half. So you have now four geographic locations with bottlenecks. So we have a huge upper hand when it comes to the geography and allowing the government to be able to maneuver around and mobilize. What about international involvement? Do you think somebody else would step in and help us like did in the Revolutionary War where France came to our aid? Well, they came to our aid because they were the enemy of England, and England was our enemy, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So we had involvement from France regarding that. We also had a little bit of help during the War of Northern Aggression that we call it down here. And while it didn't help a whole lot, it did help somewhat. Would that happen this time around? Well, you've got big players now. Who would actually get involved and why? Well, the Russians might get involved, and if they did, they would be on our side. Now, the left, it would be communist countries like North Korea or China that might get involved. I don't think you would see Europe stepping in at all. They would sit this one out. But if Russia helped us, that would be a big advantage, getting more guns and weapons in here. The same thing with the left. If China came in or North Korea came in, they might give them aid, more weapons, which they generally don't have. So that one there, you'd have to call that a draw. All right, so that would be a tie. So finally, what that leaves is the mainstream media and public relations. How would they see this? Well, first of all, if the left did use nukes against us, that would be a huge black eye in the world's view, because that would actually prove that our government is a regime that was bent on keeping its citizens squashed under its big thumb. Now, with a blackout, with the power grid going down, the media coverage would be sporadic, to say the least. But how would they actually report it? Well, as we know, the mainstream media is predominantly left-wing. Well, the world would see this and understand that this was all being reported from a left-hand side. So that would give us an advantage. As far as public relations go, if they tried to squelch us, the world's governments would understand exactly what I just said. The public relations nightmare would be huge for them. There's no way that they could really win. So we would have an advantage. It wouldn't be a huge advantage, but it would be an advantage, because they would either have to report balanced or report lopsided, and it would do extreme damage to them. So those are the 15 points that go over on this scorecard as to how things would actually pan out and who would have an advantage over the other side. Without a doubt, we have the advantage. We have the upper hand. There is no way that the left could win. I told you at the onset of this show, the government is well aware of that. There is no way that they could win a war against the right. Therefore, it would be in their best interest to not engage us at all, and to realize that we have differences that we cannot meet in the middle on, and allow the left to withdraw before this does get into a shooting war. And trust me, folks, if they don't knock off their crap, that's exactly what's going to happen. We will start a war. They know this, and they know they can't win. So it would be in their best interest for California and Oregon to secede, and for New York City, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut to secede on this side and form their own separate areas. Because for the most part, the rest of the country is conservative. I was thinking of New York at the point, so let me continue that thought. New York City is its own separate state. New York City and Long Island are the only places really in New York that think the way they do. Once you get outside of New York City, it's considered upstate. That's pretty conservative. It's pretty much like being in Vermont or New Hampshire. New York City and Long Island have ruined it for the rest of the state. So I think what you would see would be upstate New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine would remain conservative, and the aforementioned states and part of New York would go to a left-wing country, and California and Oregon. because we would need a West Coast port. So we would probably negotiate to keep Washington State, or at least part of it. But those areas are big enough. I think the liberals in Washington, in the Seattle-Tacoma area, what they call SeaTac, would be more than willing to get relocated to one of the other two states, Oregon or California. And it's coming. It really is coming, folks. I believe this wholeheartedly, and it could be as soon as 2020. But definitely sometime in the near future, if things don't stop, it will become very serious, it will become very violent, and it will become very bloody. And they know this. This is, again, why it's in their best interest to work with us on this and do something to alleviate it before it ever even begins. The establishment knows this. That is exactly why Nancy Pelosi does not want Donald Trump to be impeached. She knows full well what would happen. So do some of the other ones, but right now they're so much on the anti-Trump bandwagon that they're not thinking clearly. But all these young upstarts, all these little snot noses like AOL and her ilk, and all these Muslims that have come in, these brand new freshmen who have absolutely no clue as to how the world works, they're in for a big surprise. They don't understand this. It has not been explained to them yet. But people like Pelosi, they know full well. And you have the swamp on both sides. You have a lot of Republicans who are not on our side. They are dinos, pretty much, instead of, well, we call them rhinos, Republican in name only. But for the most part, I mean, they really are Democrats. And they think the same way. They want the same thing. And that is the destruction of this country. But it can not happen. It won't happen. The statistics say it won't happen. And people like yourselves who listen to this show will not go down easily. We will go down fighting. It is that old bumper sticker. They will pry my gun from my cold, dead fingers. And every day we have more and more things that are bringing this to a head. And probably the biggest one right now is our crisis at the southern border with Mexico. Talked about this a little bit last week. That right in and of itself could spark a civil war in this country as more and more of us want that border closed off and sealed. And more of the progressive left is doing everything they can to sabotage that effort and let more and more illegals in so that they can gain them as a voting base. That right there is a flashpoint. It is a bucket of gasoline with somebody standing there with a road flare just getting ready to throw it in. So what do you think, folks? If you're a regular listener to this show, then you probably think along the same lines that I do. We're probably on the same page. If you're new to the show, or if you're an anti-listening in, then you may not. But for the most part, those of you who tune into this show every week or catch it when you can, you understand how things work and you agree with this. And you're probably pretty well set in case something does happen. Chances are you're what the left calls a prepper or an evil gun owner. You probably own several guns, several thousand rounds of ammunition at least. You probably have some food squirreled away. Probably have some silver, maybe some gold. In case the economy crashes, you have enough stuff to get you through. Again, the left doesn't have it. They would not be prepared for what would actually happen. They're just not. I've got like 5 years worth of food. I also have a generator to keep what I have in the freezers and the refrigerator going in case the power goes out. I could last for a long time. I've got, I don't even know how many 20-pound canisters of propane I've got to operate stoves and the like. People like us will make it through. We will survive unless we're caught in the cities. Then we will be at the mercy of the mobs. And it might be in our best interest to simply flee and go somewhere else with as much as we can carry and destroy what's left. We're never really going to know until it actually happens. I do know the final outcome, however, will be that good will triumph over evil. It always does. You go to the movies, this happens all the time. We see it in Star Wars. Good always triumphs over evil. But in reality, evil tends quite often throughout history to monopolize over good for the majority of the time. In the end, good does triumph over evil, but eventually evil will make its comeback, just as it's doing right now. We've had 200 years of freedom, well, coming up on 250 years of freedom now, in this greatest experiment, this greatest social experiment that has ever existed, the United States of America. And we've been free, but in the past 50 years, we've started to see that freedom slip. Evil is gradually getting its tentacles back into our society, and I don't like it. If you listen to this show, I don't think you like it either. We are fast approaching the time when we're either going to have to crap or get off the pot. It's coming to a head. I don't think any of us really wants another war. Well, I'm sure there are some that are actively salivating for this, and rightfully so. But for the most part, if there was a peaceful way to avoid conflict, we would work it out. But in the event that that does not happen, you and I and a huge portion of the United States of America are ready for revolution. We still have some time, so get your act together. Stock up on non-perishable food. Squirrel away as much money as you can. Take it out of the bank if you can. If you can get it into silver, do that, because if the economy does crash, precious metals will trade. Now, I've got a friend who buys silver, like I do. The difference is that rather than buy it in bulk, he tends to buy it by the ounce. His thought on that is it's small enough, it's soft enough, that it can be cut in half or into quarters or even like pieces of eight, where something's not worth a whole ounce of silver, but a half an ounce or a quarter of an ounce. Keep that stuff in mind. Be prepared. Get ready. This is coming. If things don't change, this is coming, and it's going to come shortly. It will either come in 2 years or in seven, but it will come. Get your stuff ready. Have a plan of action. Have a place to go if you live in the city. If you're out in the country, you're much better off. Have friends, family that you can hook up with, meet up with. Again, have skills that will keep you going. I've gone over this before in other shows regarding prepping. This is what it was all about, folks. This is where it all comes down, where the rubber meets the road. The time's now. Take advantage of it. On that note, I will leave off here. It's been a pleasure being with you for a full hour today. As always, if you want to get in touch with me regarding this show or any other show, something you want me to go over, something you love, something you hate, please feel free to email me at TommyFreedomRings@yahoo.com. Until next week, my friends, this has been Tommy Freedom for Freedom Rings. Stay free, stay alive, stay smart, stay ahead of the curve. By all means, stay tuned, because I will be back next week. Out for now.